This year, the Who Knew podcast attended Gallifrey One 2019. This was our first year, and Gallifrey One has been going on for 30 years, and they celebrated their 30th anniversary this year. So who joined us and who went? Hi, this is Eugene, and this is my first time going.
This is Brian, and that was my first time as well.
This is Frank, and it's also my first time, and I don't usually go too many conventions.
And this is Auburn. I am also not a convention expert, but yeah, it was a pleasure to go to this smaller convention.
And Kelsey was also there with us.
Oh yes, Kelsey joined us for most of the days, Saturday and Sunday. She showed up on Friday, but did she attend anything? I think we were done.
Yeah, we were done by then. So not knowing and only hearing about and seeing about Gallifrey One through social media, I had no idea what to expect. I personally like to consider myself a comic convention veteran. I've been to San Diego Comic-Con and these more, I guess, smaller conventions, more intimate conventions, were something I didn't know what to expect, and I was, I think I was pleasantly surprised at how organized and accessible things were. So I definitely want to go again next year.
Yeah, everything kind of did seem to be in one general area.
Yeah, I like that the panel rooms were accessible. They weren't go here to wait in this line to wait in the other line type of thing.
True. Except for the photos, which we'll talk about.
Yes. Speaking of photos, on Friday we had our Catherine Tate photo opportunity.
At 10 in the morning.
Bright and early. She was, I don't know how to put it, but she was just full of energy that early in the morning. But I guess with the time difference, this was afternoon for her.
Well, also, she's an actress, and she's a professional, and she's working.
Yeah, I was surprised at how quickly they moved the people through and took their photos, because did she have something after the photo shoot?
I think she went in and signed autographs.
Yes, that's right. So I was like, how are they going to get all of these people in line through the photo booth or whatever, get the photo, get the printout, and then have her go into the dealer's room to start signing autographs? But it all worked out.
Yeah, it was great. That line was great. We were all in really good moods. No one was tired yet.
Yeah. She was very personable. At no point did I feel as if, oh no, I got to do this. She was very happy to see people, happy to, you know, be there. Her energy levels were very high.
I saw your photos on Instagram, and of course you showed it to me in person. How many shutters did you actually get to take with her? Was it like a quick come in, greeting, and then snap, you're done? Or did you get any time to take a few photos? Or
no, that was it, how you described it the first time. You hit your mark, you look at the camera, you do your thing, and then you're done.
Wow.
It was not an interaction. It really was just a photo spot.
And that was fine, because they had, you know, they kept saying that over and over and over again. It is just come in, take the photo. And then they would say, you know, if you want to talk to them, ask them a question in during their panel, or, you know, they're going to be signing autographs in the dealer's room. You know, you can mm-hmm. do more things there. So this really was just go in, snap the photo, and leave. But they had it down to a science. It was great.
Yeah, I thought both of you did a really great job posing. I mean, both of your snaps looked really natural and fun, and like everyone was having a good time.
Yeah,
it was great, because I didn't tell her to do anything. I just made my pose, and then she mimicked it, like off of the energy I was, I guess, exuding. She did the same thing, and I thought that was really great how she picked up on that.
Yeah, and I walked up to her, and she put her arm on my shoulder, and all I could think of was, oh my God, she's putting her arm on my shoulder.
You know, we just finished season 4 with you know, Donna's run as the official companion. And I think that happenstance of that we get to see her right after we just did her season, it just meant a little bit more to me personally.
And me.
I don't know. We couldn't have planned that any better.
Yeah, they had some really great guests this year at the show or at the convention.
Before we get on to other guests, I want to give a layout of the place, because it was all taking place in the bottom floor of the hotel. And when you went down there, there's the check-in tables, which really ran pretty well. You could just go on up there and check in. They had the main room, room A, right across from it, which had the big presentations. And then the dealer's room, which was pretty small from what I'm used to. But it had spilled out into the hallway. So they had the exhibitor's hallway right next to it. And towards the end were the smaller rooms. And they also had something I haven't seen. They have a video room set up. So they were showing episodes of Doctor Who, both classic and the new, just running continuously all day. So you can go in there and take a little break. So I thought that was really nice.
I don't mean this in a bad way. It was a very old-fashioned convention. They had panels that... The panels were more of the panel was like listening to a podcast
before
because
podcast.
You just had a group. You had just people who were fans talking about specific issues. It wasn't, you know, every panel wasn't come see this star, come see this writer, director. There were a lot of panels that were just opinion panels.
And that threw me off because I was used to having somebody in the industry being on the panel and have it just other fans was very different, you know.
But yes, that was jarring.
It turned out to be pretty good for most of them. There's some I was like, okay, wait a minute. And a negative was the microphones never seemed to work properly. And and Gallifrey 1 did not have a tech in each room while the panel was going on. They had set everything up, and it could be just the people not being in the professional realm where they didn't know how to work those microphones because they seemed to be very directional in that you had to speak directly in line with the tip of the microphone, and a lot of them had the noise cancellation fuzz ball at the end, and so it would not pick up if you're talking sideways into it.
And then another consistent thing was if there was five people on the panel, they had four microphones.
Right. And if there were four people,
I don't think
have
there
three
was one panel we saw. Huh?
If there were four people, they'd have three microphones.
Right.
If there were six people, they would have five. It just seemed to be consistent throughout.
Yeah, that was odd when they would have to share and then you would hear the rattle or the shuffling of the mic on the table. But people did well with what they were given. Well, most of them did well with what they were given.
And don't get me wrong, most of this was really nice, a lot more relaxed than any other convention I've been to.
Yeah, I will definitely agree with you on that the bigger conventions, there's a little bit more, I guess, pressure and stress, where this felt more of a conversation rather than a presentation, which was something I had to get used to.
I liked that everybody was there. Like, you know, you go to Comic-Con and everybody's in a good mood and all that kind of, you know, there's nobody there who doesn't fit. But everybody at this convention was into Doctor Who. So it was like, we have a common language if we need to. And although the dealer's room was small, I thought it had really good stuff in it.
Yeah, I'm used to like spending a whole day on the dealer's floor. So to do it in like one loop wasn't something I'm used to, but I did like the, I guess the intimacy of it is the best way to put it, where you could really get in there and see what the exhibitors and the vendors had, as opposed to waiting in a line to get into a booth. So I did enjoy that trade-off.
And at least for all the vendors that I talked to, they all seemed to like Doctor Who as well. So they liked what they were selling, which made a difference, you know. It wasn't just a corporate thing like you get down at Comic-Con.
Yeah, because that's something I have noticed where these people are, or the bigger conventions, these are people that are hired to sell product rather than the love of the product. I know that sounds similar, but there is a difference where at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con at least, you get these people who are hired just to be eye candy for people to come into their booth. Like they hire like models, and that's how they get traction.
Yeah, this had a real mom and pop feel. On the the last Sunday, I was looking to buy some shirts, and because it's a smaller convention, not everyone was taking credit cards. But the most corporate booth that I saw, just because they were selling shirts of not only Doctor Who, but Firefly and Marvel and DC, but the couple running it were very sweet. Kelsey and I talked to them about Doctor Who. We talked to them about other movies. They asked us how our convention time was. So even the most like corporate-y looking booth turned out to be a very friendly experience.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was a good way for us to end our time in the convention.
Well, you guys were off, you know, taking your picture with Catherine Tate. I'm a little jealous.
I couldn't tell at all.
At the 30 years of Gallifrey 1, the introduction, the opening ceremonies, if you will, and that was a lot of fun. They came out and did the basic, you know, who really likes, or what do you think of the new doctor? How do you like Jodie Whittaker? And there was a large applause when he mentioned her. And then he had mentioned, well, what do you think about Series 11, which is her first season? And it was kind of mediocre applause, polite applause. So it seems most of these people like her as an actress and maybe what she's doing as the doctor, but the season itself was a little lackluster, just from their reviews, you know, their applause. And then Colin Baker came out, so the Sixth Doctor, and that was really nice. And he seems a lot like the Sixth Doctor. His personality is a bit abrupt. He has that dry sense of humor. He is very funny. He has some great little anecdotes and little one-liners that he put out there. Something like, he asked everybody, is this your first time? And a lot of people raised their hand. I did. And goes, that means the rest of you actually came back? You know, so it was a little bit of a good humor to it, you know, to see him, he was thinking. He went on to talk about his seasons and how he wanted it to be at least 5 years and beat Tom Baker's record, which he thought was a bit arrogant looking at what happened to him because he didn't last that long. They also talked to him about the new season, and he thinks that it's definitely great, and he was one of the first supporters of having a woman be the doctor, because he said on a cellular level, everything about the doctor changes. Why can't that change? Let's see. He's talking about, you know, he had, you know, one companion while he was the doctor, and he didn't really need to have all these other companions, but then he went on to say, well, no one else would take the job with him. So, you know, he had a good sense of humor, self-deprecating part. After he left, then Yasmin Bannerman came out, and she played Jabe. And this was her first convention, too, and she was a bit overwhelmed by everybody. And it was fun listening to her story, which I had never heard before, of having older brothers, and they would all watch from behind the couch, which just seemed such a stereotype to me, not really seeing this as a kid, but it never occurred to me to hide behind a couch. But that seems to be the running joke in England in other English shows, like coupling. You know, everybody hides behind the couch when the Daleks arrive. It was a good little opening introduction to Gallifrey 1.
The whole convention had a lot of interesting characters just because it was based out of this British show. And so everyone had that kind of drier British humor, you know, self-deprecating sarcasm.
It was wonderful.
Later on, and I think it was on Saturday, Colin Baker also had another panel. So he was there just not at the beginning, but then he was throughout the whole convention. He was there. He was signing in the dealer's room, and the signing tables were really close. You could just walk up to them, and there's he signed
it. And they were right by the door.
John Barrowman signed it right by the door. It was like they're right here. It's not like they're put off somewhere else. Those were for the photographs. Those are in a separate room. But when he came back, he talked a little bit more about John Nathan Turner, who was a producer on the original series for the last of Tom Baker until it ended. And Colin Baker had worked on Doctor Who before becoming the Doctor. So he and Peter Capaldi also had a role on a previous Doctor Who before becoming the Doctor. I thought that was interesting. I did not know that about his little role that he had.
Same thing with Lilo Ward and Romana. So Doctor Who has a history of, it's like, if you're going to be a guest star on Doctor Who, act well.
Correct.
Yeah, like we got Freema Agyeman. She was the...
That's right.
Torchwood, I guess, analyst in the end of season 2, and then she became the official companion in season 3.
He and John Turner had become friends outside as well. So when it came time to get the new doctor, Colin did not have to audition for it. John Baker just said, John Turner just said, yeah, Joris, come on in. And he always thought it was bad that they introduced his doctor at the end of an episode, and it was months and months before he came back, because he had a snide comment at the end of that, just, I'm the doctor, and had that face, and so people were left with that image, and it didn't bring a lot to his role.
I'm the doctor, and I didn't, you know, I didn't get here a moment too soon, or something like that. It was very like, oh, I, you know, everybody's lucky that I've arrived finally, kind of a
feel to the line. So it was kind of off-putting.
And he wished it would have been sooner before his season started.
You know, but then again, in his first episode, he stands up and tries to choke his companion. So it really didn't go well. So
that is true. He did not pick his costume. He did not like his costume. He wanted more of Eccleston's type costume. But it was a kid's show, and he knew that, and the kids liked the clownish costume he was wearing. And he keeps saying that his figure sells out quickest at any of the conventions. And he knew he was patronizing to Perry, but now he has a new companion who's older in a lot of the shows, and he liked that better. It had more of a dynamic.
Are you talking about the audio?
The Big Finish audios.
What's in the
I think it's in the audios. I think it's in the audios now that he's doing.
Do you happen to know the name of the companion?
No, I think that's when you guys came in. I missed what he was saying. Because you guys had come in from, I think, the Barrowman photo shoot you guys took. And I was saving seats for us. I didn't really know too much about the Sixth Doctor, because he wasn't my favorite from what I had seen of him. But he was very funny, and I did like him. I liked what he had to say. He can own a crowd.
Yeah, from what little I saw of him, he was the most personable that I felt I'd ever seen him as. Because I've seen him in interviews, and it wasn't that he was you know, bad or anything, but he did just seem a little bit arrogant. And in this, it seemed like he was coming off with a dry sense of humor. So I liked that.
Now, going back to modern or current Who, at one of the evening panels was the live commentary for The Woman Who Fell to Earth, which is Jodie Whittaker's first full episode as the Doctor.
It was a commentary with the director of the episode,
Jamie Childs. So I hope that I have just purchased the latest season on Blu-ray. So I don't know if that episode has that particular commentary or if we got an exclusive commentary, but...
Well, the guy was sitting in the room.
Oh, so I did not see that when I went in.
Yeah.
So
That's right. But yeah, he and the woman who was asking him the questions, they were sitting right in front of the screen.
I wondered. I'm like, where are they?
Yeah.
Oh, so anyway.
Otherwise, they timed their reactions to the laughing very well.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on? So that answers a big question that I had, so thank you. But what I liked about that commentary is what I generally like about extra commentary on DVDs is that it's a mix of both story, creative problems, and then production problems, and then some insights on how they solved one or two of those problems. And it's not just all production nightmares and how they had to overcome them, and it's not all just stories, you know what I mean? There's like it's a combination.
Yeah, he had a good balance.
Yeah, like he mentioned one thing that was like, to me, just made me go, huh, I'm gonna have to rewatch that scene in a different way, was where Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor is jumping. It's like that scene where she's jumping to the other crane at the climax of the episode. And they said that they couldn't get the cranes to move, so they made the camera move, which made it look like the cranes were moving.
That was a great part. It's like, really? Just nicely done. Nicely done.
And then he also was telling us the story of how the whole making of the sonic screwdriver and being in that industrial warehouse where the one guy brought the giant Hershey's Kiss. That was supposed to be in a house. In the script, it was in a house. And they just changed it when they found this location. And so the director was just saying how that opened up a lot more possibilities and also just made the episode look and work better because it was in that warehouse.
Yeah, the other, I guess the one production nightmare that stuck out for me was when the Doctor is facing off with the villain, Tim Shaw, at the end. Her shots are all not rainy, and then when they cut to his reaction shots, it's all raining. And I didn't really notice that, but he said it just started raining when they had to switch the setup for the camera for Tim Shaw, and they couldn't wait. They just had to keep going. So I'm like, it kind of works as a like an art direction or a motif. The Doctor isn't getting rained on, but yet the villain is, so it's fine by me.
And the actor was going through his own personal nightmare in the rain.
Oh my goodness, I can't believe he kept going.
Yeah, because they weren't hundreds of feet up like they are in the episode, but they were a good 40 to 50 feet up on the built crane. Mm-hmm. And so you couldn't have a makeup person there or anything like that. So the poor actor was just getting rain and dye and glue in his eyes. And he said he kept wiping his eyes on the director's shirt because there wasn't anything else he could use.
Yeah, and speaking of the Tim Shaw character, they said that the teeth look tested well with kids. So I thought, yeah, there's another thing that says Doctor Who is for kids. Like, they watch it behind the sofa, and then kids in the playground are now fighting against an invisible Tim Shaw. And then they asked, where do you get the teeth that were on his face? And they said that you can just buy them off of eBay. They make casts of his teeth. I was so worried that they were going to be like, yeah, we get them from dentists.
That was fun. That was at the end of the night. That was after we saw Catherine Tate's...
the first panel?
Her first panel, which was great. She started with Who Came From the Furthest. And I think we finally settled on the person from Adelaide, Australia, had come from the furthest. So that was fun. And she came down into the crowd and was walking around. So...
Yeah, that freaked everybody out. They loved it.
Yeah, but it was a good icebreaker, and then she got up there, and her big funny thing was, look, I know nothing about Doctor Who, I know nothing about science fiction, you know, I had a great time filming this series, but don't ask me what I think about certain things in Doctor Who, because I don't have an opinion.
But she just came out, she did, you know, Who Came the Furthest, went into the audience a little bit, and then started with questions right away, and... She is good at stand-up. She knows how to tell a story. She's a very funny person and kept us all entertained for that complete hour.
I got to see her at her second panel, and I'll agree, she's very quick-witted. And I know she said that she is not a geek or into all the science of Doctor Who or the story, the science, I'm using air quotes, of Doctor Who. But I thought that she answered some of those questions that were more geared towards fandom very quickly, very honestly, and very well. She might not have thought that she had the correct word right away, but in almost all the cases in the panel that I was in with her, she was right on the money with alien races and names for technology and other Doctor Who speak.
Yeah, I also went to her second panel on, I believe, Saturday, because she was not there Sunday. And just like, Frank, what you were mentioning earlier with Colin Baker, it's like there's a reason that these people are put into such big roles. It's because they are entertaining, and they can entertain a crowd. And usually when I go to conventions, the audience participation is the part that I cringe at the most, and that's kind of my cue to leave the panel, to be honest. But with a panel or a person, a personality like Catherine Tate, and then we'll talk about later with John Behrman, they know how to handle these questions that initially you'll kind of shudder at, but then the way they deal with it is what makes it entertaining. And I think that is a testament to these people being entertainers.
I think she got one question where it was like, well, what did you think of when you read this in the script? And she was like, I think I would deliver the lines as they were written in the script.
Right.
You know, it's like, it really didn't have an, you know, I mean, her Donna stuff had an impact on her. And that question wasn't asking specifically about the big stuff that happens to Donna. I think it was a little bit more in the middle of the season, just kind of like one of the one-off episodes. And she was like, yeah, I'm an actress. I just come in, do the lines, have fun, go home, get a paycheck, you know. But then she was talking later about how she loved the character arc of Donna from Runaway Bride all the way to what happens to her at the end.
Back to Runaway Bride.
Right, back to Runaway Bride. And she said that the line that affected her the most when she read it was, I was going to travel with you forever.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that was the line that got her.
Mm.
And that's just what everybody in the audience did.
Definitely fell in love with her a little bit more.
Yeah, to all those people who don't like Donna's season, you should go see Catherine Tate in person. Because I think it'll change your opinion in that you are wrong.
All right. They did ask her if she's going to do any tour of her stand-up. And it's pretty much a no. But you never know. Hopefully, because I've seen some of her other work, some of her other TV shows and specials. You know, she had that, her with David Tennant, in the, which one was it, Brian? The Christmas special or...
Yeah, that was on her, the Catherine Tate show.
Okay.
And it was the Christmas special episode where she does so an obnoxious teenager character. And this one was David Tennant came in to be a substitute teacher, and she tells him off, and he finally sonics her into her action figure. And that was very funny.
She's doing more conventions now.
She
mentioned that she was still kind of new to it. But I think hopefully there's more opportunities to see her speaking live at these different conventions.
Yeah, because I think whether you're a Doctor Who fan or not, just seeing her command an audience will win you over to her. And you'll want to see her in other things.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I remember taking away from her non-Doctor Who work and her comedy work is that she bases all her characters kind of on real people that she knows, and she just changes the way they look. Like she did a thing with her mom, and she gave her mom curly hair and not straight hair, and then she was watching the little skit or sketch with her mom and thinking, she's gonna know that I'm making fun of my mom or her. And then she turns to her mom after the skit is over and goes, "What'd you think? That was you." Like, "No, that looks nothing like me. I don't have curly hair."
Yeah, that was a good anecdote from Catherine Tate on comedy.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to segue into the John Berryman panel?
I think so, because on that second panel, she came into his. So that's a good segue. She just, you know,
amazing.
Talk about owning the room.
Yeah, that was fun. And I don't know who the listeners, if they've been to the John Berryman panel at San Diego Comic-Con, but then to have him here in a more accessible venue, because last year his panel was capped, and so there was a lot of people that were upset that they couldn't make it in. And so I was glad I was able to get into this one without too much of a hassle.
Yeah, John.
And an interesting experience it was.
Entertaining from start to finish.
I loved it.
Yeah, in all forms of entertainment. We had kind of crude humor and then sexual innuendo and then
a little burlesque.
And then he ended with a song that was amazingly performed.
John Berryman is another person that I would suggest, if anyone has the opportunity to see live, take it and do it, because he is, like you said, an entertainer and a performer and just so much energy and such a great, very positive energy. Like, he was just happy to be there, happy to be with the fans, and the fans were happy to be with him, and everything just came together. So much like goodness in that panel.
Yeah, it's amazing how it was entertaining and positive, because sometimes you become entertaining by criticizing something else or someone else, but this one was really, really just uplifting.
Mm-hmm. And when we say positive, we don't mean like kumbaya, huggy feely. He was telling people to shut up. He was yelling at people, but everyone was having a good time.
Yeah, and it was all done in like the spirit of fun. Like, mm-hmm. He would tell them to shut up in a funny way,
with a tongue in cheek, yes. And give a little wink.
Sometimes he gave more than a wink.
Hey, it twirled up.
I think the fun.
Yes, he wasn't a dress. He wasn't in his hardest dress.
I think the funniest thing when he was interacting, because it was very much like the Catherine Tate panel where he's interacting with the audience. They were lined up for questions, and this girl was a fan, and she was just shaking at the fact that John Berryman is inches away from her. And what does he do to calm her down? He puts her underneath his dress.
Yeah, that was Frank's favorite part, wasn't it, Frank?
He is a bit over the top at times. And hey, he says, you know, just accept people for who they are. I accept him. Hopefully he accepts me for being judgmental.
I know I have.
No. But John does go a bit over the top. And at times it was, you know, a little prudish of me going, oh, gosh. But then he goes and he talks seriously about something, about a scene, about what, you know, Jack would be doing. And it would just bring me right in. You know? So he is very entertaining. He is a lot of fun. And he, you know, he knows his craft of acting and knows how to get there. So it was really a great panel to see, both him and Catherine Tate. She's humorous, but in a whole different way. He's so much more gregarious and out there.
Oh. In your face. I don't think Ender agrees with you.
He's also much more of a fan than I think Catherine Tate would call herself. Yeah. Like, you could ask him, you know, those weird questions, and I think he would probably have an opinion on most of the intrigue when it came to, like, the physics or what gun did he use or what, you know, what he was wearing at the time.
But what was nice, at one point when he was, when John Barron was singing, the security is going around and stopping people from filming, and he said, let them film, it's okay, let them film. Yeah. I thought that was
nice. Yeah, that was nice.
That was nice. And he was soaking it up. Like, yeah, you couldn't stop it. Like, he was just soaking up the adulation and everything.
You know, let the film put it out there so they can sell more. Come on. I want to sell this new album.
Now, an interesting thing with John Barrowman is Eugene and I also got photographs with him. And that was interesting because it was a very, very long line. And he had two photo opportunities. One was John Barrowman just in his t-shirt that he was wearing that day. And then there was a group of us who got him wearing his Captain Jack coat from Torchwood.
So naturally, and that's what we did.
Yes. And it was chaos when they were trying to separate the lines. And they did a really good job as best they could because, you know, these were convention people who weren't going to follow what they should have done. But anyway, we finally got into the room and we were in the switchbacks waiting, and John Barrowman came out into that room real quick and said, you know, just to let you know, it, once I'm wearing the coat, there's no risque poses. There's no craziness. There's no over the top. You know, I don't do that when I'm wearing Captain Jack's coat, which made total sense. But Eugene and I, there was two guys in front of us who were like, oh, they were just disappointed.
No, but again, that line, just like the Catherine Tate photo opportunity, moved like lightning and clockwork.
Yeah, it flew.
They were able to get everybody to do the photos that they paid for and into his panel in the right amount of time. It was just insane that it moved so quickly.
Yeah.
Because he did 2 hours of poses. He had the first hour of just John Barrowman, the second hour with the coat, and then he went right into the panel.
Yeah, I don't know how he... And he did a wardrobe change, I believe. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, that's right, because he came out in the dress.
I'm like, how did... What?
He's an actor. He's been on stage. He knows quick change.
Speaking of coats, there was a lot of good cosplay. I think that's one thing that's great about these smaller conventions that are more niche, is that you get more fans that put work into their costume. Like, they spend the whole year up to this event, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was great to see. We'll have some photos posted on our website and social media, but we had a clockwork droid. I never thought I would see that.
Oh, that was amazing.
He did great.
Like, wow. And then I cosplayed as the 10th Doctor, so there was a 10th Doctor meetup. It was a hair club for 10, and then everybody that was dressed up as the 10th Doctor that day got together and took a group photo. So that was great to see everybody's suit and coat and variations thereof.
There were a few Daleks.
Yeah.
K-9.
Kelsey got one.
I didn't see any.
Yeah, Kelsey K-9, got one. Yeah. Kelsey got one with a Dalek, so I posted that one.
There was also the two little kids dressed as Are You My Mommy?
Yeah, the empty childs.
Yeah, the two empty childs. And they were really well done. And I was like, oh, I got to get a picture of that. And even though their face was completely covered by the mask, I stopped myself and went, no, these are little kids. I don't know who they are. I'm just going to enjoy the costume and move on.
I'm trying to think. There were various other meetups, like the 13th Doctor, 12th, 11th. There was a Don.
A lot of people in the 13th Doctor.
Yeah, there was a Donna Noble meetup that Catherine Tate crashed. I don't know if you guys saw that. That was cool.
Wow. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I didn't know.
There were a couple really good Donnas.
And there's one that scared me. He was in the audience during one of these panels, and it was the Master. From the third Doctor. What's the episode with the daffodils? The plastic daffodils?
Terror of the Auton.
Yes. And he looked so good, and he was selling daffodils, yellow daffodils.
That was
like,
that was like a deep cut. That was such a deep cut. I was like, bravo, sir.
That actually scared me.
I have a picture of that cosplay along with the man who was dressed as the Brigadier.
Oh.
So that was great.
Yes, I believe we follow him on Instagram. I think he's the Geek Regeneration. He's always the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, the Brigadier.
The first time I've seen him not be the fourth Doctor. And I apologize, we did see Cyberman, and because I have photos of the Cyberman with Eugene, and the Cyberman has a sign saying free Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And I came home with all these marks on my arms and face. So I know I saw the Silence at one point.
Who? What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, and then while we were waiting in line for the John Barrowman photo op, a guy as Davros just rolls by in his chair. I was like, holy crap.
Davros was great. And then you took that picture with him, and he turned to you and he's like, all right, get on my other side. And you went onto the other side so he could choke you.
he knew what to do. It was just amazing.
There was a really great weeping angel.
There were several.
You got a picture with the best one, though.
Yeah, he was huge. Like,
yeah.
The others were, I don't know how, whatever. But they, carrying those wings, man.
They all look great.
Yeah.
And then you got a picture with another couple, Eugene. What were they cosplaying as?
Yeah, so that is the, I believe, the cosplay parents. And they have embraced this whole social media thing of going dressed up as characters to certain events. Like, they will go and be... they will Disney bound at the Disney parks. They will go to like WonderCon and they'll dress up as Captain America and Agent Carter. So they're very much into this whole geek culture and dressing up. And so I was like, what? They're here at Gallifrey? I have to take a photo with them. And yes, they were dressed up as Up. And the husband did the kind of the 11th Doctor, but as Carl. The 11th Doctor, so I thought that was a good mashup.
Uh-huh.
And then the wife did the Scout. So she did Russell with a little bit of, I think, Doctor Who flair on the sash and some other things. So I was like, I have to meet these internet celebrities.
Hmm. Well, I think that's a good segue to not everything was Doctor Who. You know, because they had that bit of Disney. We all recognized them more as Up. And then we saw there were also some panels for other sci-fi. So I went to a Buffy panel about the new Buffy that's coming up, the new take on it. And that threw me because it was mostly run by fans. I thought they would have more information than I did about the upcoming Buffy, the whole reboot. But as it went on, it became, now I can got more into it. And they were talking about different aspects of Buffy. And we were all, you know, kind of just a group of people getting together with something that they love. So it's like, this is what the conventions used to be.
And then we had a really great panel with celebrating the 25th anniversary of Babylon 5.
Oh, and so entertaining.
That was pretty much the entire cast who are still with us. And that was a lot of fun. And Walter Koenig was...
he was
the butt of jokes, and he was also... very much on fire.
I was going to say he was in rare form or on fire. I didn't know which one, but you said on fire, so we'll go with on fire.
Yeah, he and Bruce Boxleitner just went back and forth. That was great.
Oh, so good. And then other than that, we had Claudia Christensen and Patricia Tillman, right? Patricia Tillman?
Yeah, Tallman.
Tallman. And Mira Furlong.
Yeah. And...
They're another really good cast. I feel like, even though I haven't been to many conventions... I see Babylon 5 cast at every one that I've been to.
Yeah, that was an unexpected treat. I was not expecting that to be there, and I'm glad we went.
Very much so.
They were another cast that were really fans of the show and fans of science fiction in general. It felt like they seemed like they really loved the whole idea of the show, of Babylon 5, and just really enjoyed coming out and being a part of fandom and giving a chance for fans to see them speak and also speak to fans. It was really like a pleasurable panel.
Yeah, I will say one thing about all these panels. They're only an hour long. I think they need to be like an hour and a half or 2 hours because it kind of gets going maybe 15 to 30 minutes in, and then by the time it's good, it's done.
Right, they have 55 minutes per panel. You get out, the new panel has to come in and start right away.
So, I do wish they gave the bigger panels a little bit more time, but it's probably for programming that they keep everything so tight. Anyway, that's just a personal thing that I like or would want.
One of the other panels we saw was talking about season 11, the latest one with Jodie Whittaker. And that was a really interesting panel. Do you have a listing of who the moderators were up there or who was on the panel? Because that was a little bit more like a regular large convention in that they had something to do with either the show or Doctor Who comics, writing the books.
And they kept saying, you know, well, I know Chris Chibnall and so on. I talked to him.
Right. They had an authority to them.
Mm.
Okay, so this says that was Simon Guerrier as the moderator, Tony Lee, who was also the moderator for Babylon 5, Devin Pike, Kathleen Showalter, Inya Konevsky, and Annie Johnson.
And that was fun.
I don't think I was at that panel. What, they just talk about production of the...
Well, the little synopsis said they're going to go episode by episode and talk a little bit about each episode.
Hey, they stole our idea.
That didn't happen.
Well, I would say...
they saw us and said we can't do it with them in the audience.
Because what they did was sort of the overview, but a overview instead of a deeper dive like we've done.
Hmm.
It was like, you know, well, did you like the idea of three companions? Did you like it being standalone episodes? No, overreaching storyline, no big mystery that needed to be solved, things of that nature.
Hmm.
And it was interesting, you know, it's kind of like, you know, some of the same things that we've
brought up.
Yeah. I mean, I personally like the fact that they were standalone episodes. Things went a little smaller this season, which I think is a good thing because it was getting too big.
I agree.
Not everything needs to be the end of the universe. And they were also talking about having three companions and that they did feel that that might have been too many companions and that along the way, companions seemed to get lost and they seemed to focus a lot on Ryan. They thought that Ryan was the one who got lost.
Yeah, I liked that discussion because they were saying... For a tighter season, tighter stories, they could have had Yasmin be the daughter rather than Ryan being the son and got rid of the character Ryan. And so they could do that whole relationship of, you know, her stepfather.
Grandfather.
Or step-grandfather, that's right. And use her. But just like they said, when they were working with Mandeep, with Yasmin's character, they kind of just forgot about... Tosin Cole's character, Ryan. You know, and if they brought in Ryan, they'd drop her. A lot of times they would, you know, use him one or the other and not really put them together. Everybody loved Bradley Walsh's character of Graham. Thought he did a great job.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They said he was the breakout companion for this season.
Yeah. It just, each panel did, like Eugene said, take at least 10 minutes to find their footing or find the flow and get going.
Because it was like, whoa, I haven't been at a convention like this in 30 years. And then it was like, oh, okay, now I get it. But then also, like, I think like the first fan-only panel we saw was not the best.
Yeah.
And then the second one where they were talking about the 11 series, it was much, much better.
Yeah, because that was a mix of fans and professionals.
And also knew how to talk and project their voice without a microphone.
Mm-hmm. Or to use one, because it really made a big difference if they... spoke directly into the microphone, straight on.
Well, Eugene, you and I got to go to a podcast panel. I took off work a little early on Friday to make it to a panel of podcasters that all have podcasts around, of course, Doctor Who. None of the quote-unquote big players in the Doctor Who podcast world were there, speaking of the Verity podcast and Radio Free Scarrow. But they had a pretty big panel, and it sounded like we were in good company as far as some of the trials and tribulations that I think we felt in starting a Who Doctor Who podcast. Yeah. Like, it's a pretty common experience across the board. But I do want to give a shout out to John Pingle at Night of the Living Geeks, notlg.com. He was on the panel, and he's another Doctor Who podcaster based in Los Angeles. And it was cool meeting somebody who also does this, and we got to talk about a few technical things, and hopefully we'll be able to do some crossovers or collaborations in the future for podcasts. But yeah, I would say not to toot our own horns, I think we're doing okay as a Doctor Who podcast. And yeah, it was interesting to hear from so many other people in the same world.
Didn't you say the consensus was really, if you're going to do a Doctor Who podcast, it really has to be a labor of love?
Yes. I don't think any of us are going to be making a career out of Who Knew podcast. So I'm going to have to change my 5-year plans. I mean, it was one panel where the technical shortcomings of the convention, I felt, were fighting against the content of the panel, only because it was my first panel of this convention, and also it was about podcasting, and I think there was seven or eight people on the panel, and there was 4 microphones.
Oh yeah.
And while they all had good mic technique, once they were on mic, there was a lot of shuffling microphones back and forth to make it all work.
One of the things that I got out of that is that people's tastes and preferences tend to shift with their mood. I like to think that the Who Knew podcast is a well-produced show, where some of the panelists, they want a well-produced show some days, and some days they want something that's like recorded in a garage, and it's just their mood. And that's something that us as a podcasting group, we decided we want something that's more like radio ready, and I think we really hit that. And to hear them talk about what their preferences are kind of made me happy that we shot for something a little bit with let's say higher production value.
Well, don't show them Waters of Mars episode. We had some problems getting that one done.
I would say despite the technical difficulties with Waters of Mars, we should show them Waters of Mars and see how well we did with that.
That's true. Agreed.
Definitely a big shout out to you, Eugene, for editing all of our episodes, because I think your pain was shared among all of the panel when questions about editing came up.
It's just funny, like when he said, don't spend your time over editing, I'm like, that's never a problem. When it's done, it's done.
But I did really think that it was neat to see not only the people on the panel, but they also asked the audience who was interested in starting a podcast, who was doing podcasts. And, you know, the podcasting itself is experiencing a pop culture moment.
Like a big
boom. It was great to, and it was great to see so many people interested in starting things. And if any of our listeners are interested in starting a podcast on any subject, you know, I would say go for it, because you will find an audience. Even if it is just 10 people, they'll still be your audience, and you'll be able to speak to them and speak about things that interest you.
There's no way about it. You just have to do it and jump into it.
Mm-hmm. Even if it is in a garage with a lot of echo, like, just start doing it and you'll get better. I mean, we certainly have improved, I think,
since
our first season.
Do you want to talk about what you did on Sunday?
Yeah, I got to... So you guys all left the convention as the sun was going down, and I got to stay a few evenings. Saturday evening, we walked around a little bit, found a... What was it? Oh, it was a 2 teams of 3, and they had to tell a truth and two people had to lie and the other team had to figure out who was telling the truth. But it was interesting. Lila from DS9 was there, Chase Masterson, who I did not realize was on the panel until the next day I saw her signing autographs. but yeah, at night, the convention, you know, people went up to the bar and there was a lot of drinking, a lot of socializing. I don't think you guys missed too much by leaving after the main program was finished, though. But if you were coming to LA just for this convention, there is a big nightlife that happens at it, you know, after the main program is done. So if you're traveling here, you don't have to seek out other people after the convention is over. They all stay there and have fun. And then Sunday, we basically just shopped in the dealer's room. And we also went to the art space. Is that what it's called? Artist?
Yes, the studio? Art gallery.
Yeah.
And a little art
show. Kelsey picked up a cool Gallifrey 1 jacket there.
Nice.
And I finally bought some t-shirts, some geeky t-shirts to wear at some panels. But I'm still working on my cosplay.
Good.
I do want to mention one more person. Kelsey and I did go to a panel that was led by Blair Mowat, who is a composer. I think he composed a lot of Class. So you might not be familiar with his work, Eugene, but he was playing a game called Name That Hoon.
Oh, you told me about this. Yes.
Yes, a riff on Name That Tune, but with all Doctor Who music. And it was a lot of fun. It was a really good panel. I think he is taking it to other conventions. So he asked people not to give away all of his answers for his Name That Hoon. But if you have a chance to see him, he went on a journey of the Doctor Who theme song from how it was originally composed by...
The original theme song, Ron Grainer?
Ron Grainer, yes. How it was originally composed by Ron Grainer. But he talked about a woman who did the arrangement of it.
Delia Derbyshire.
Delia Derbyshire, who did the arrangement of it and played samples from each. And I don't think that she gets the credit that she deserves for creating the iconic theme song that all of us know today.
I wanted to thank her in our outro, but I was vetoed.
Oh. Well, she's getting her due now. And so if you have a chance, Blair, B-L-A-I-R, Mowat, M-O-W-A-T. He's on Twitter. He's on Instagram. But a really interesting panel that was also a lot of fun. You got prizes. So if you have a chance to go to that, definitely do it.
Speaking of fans, one of the fans of Doctor Who reached out to us, and she's working on a really cool project. This is from Mary Helen Harris. I'll just read what she's working on that she sent me. Russell T. Davis once told Elizabeth Sladen that the world needs more Sarah Jane Smith. Adventures on Earth Productions is providing just that in Defending Earth, The Adventures of Sarah Jane Smith. The largest and most comprehensive collection of Sarah Jane stories, the book is over 150,000 words long, running about the same length as Dune, Watership Down, or Return of the King. Defending Earth is raising money in loving memory of Sladen. All proceeds will be donated to the Cancer Research Institute. Featuring official Doctor Who and Doctor Who spin-off writers like Joshua Wanisco, Kara Dennison, James Boyachuk, and Nika Haringsma, Defending Earth answers questions like, what happened when Sarah Jane's life was turned into an 80s stage musical? When Sarah Jane met Romana, can the secrets of an underground ghost tour still mystify them? What does Sarah Jane think of crop circles? When London disappears into a mass of alternate realities, can Sarah Jane help the Third Doctor get their London back? All these and more are answered in Defending Earth. It's available until April 2nd, 2019 at defendingearth.bigcartel.com. It's available in ebook, print, and as an ebook print bundle. So, very cool project. If you are in a position to support them, you should check them out. And, you know, she found us because we just recently did the Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith episodes from the Sarah Jane Adventures. So we are getting out there.
More than 10.
Yeah.
I want to give some shout-outs to a couple of people. First one is the Order of Gallifrey. I met up with them and got to talk with Bonnie and Nate. They were also dressed up as doctors. Bonnie was the 12th Doctor and Nate was the 5th Doctor. It was a shame I couldn't make it to their cosplay meetup on Sunday. And then a shout-out to Temple of Geek, and specifically Monica, who... we always run into each other at Comic Cons, and it's great to always talk with her about Doctor Who. And you can find these people on social media. I think if you type in at Order of Gallifrey and then at Temple of Geek, and for Monica specifically, you can find her at This Dorky Nerd Girl. And she's a great photographer. You can find her themed photo shoots or cosplay meetups, they're great. Thanks for listening. That wraps up Gallifrey 1 2019, and we will see you next time in 2020.